Hey, everybody, welcome to the New World Pictures Podcast, where we're going to talk about every movie released by New World Pictures and even those movies that New World nearly put out. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Mark.
You know, if I had a jet engine on my car, I would use it a lot more.
And Erica.
Bras are overrated.
And welcome to Sci-Fi July Presents Dystopian Summer 2. Dystopia harder. We're going to talk about a lot of the dystopian movies released by New World Pictures. But first, we're going to start with a movie that New World nearly put out. In fact, this is a movie that was actually made for New World Pictures, but didn't end up getting released by New World Pictures. And we'll explain more in a second. I just wanted to ask, had you guys ever seen this before?
No.
No.
No. Okay. Now this is a,
I feel like I've seen this before.
Yes. Right. Right. Because it was so strikery.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It was so strikery, yes. And right. Mad Maxy, and
yeah. And because yes. It, of course, this was directed
Desport-y.
Desport-y. Yeah. So yeah. It feels very much like a New World movie because it's directed by Sirio Santiago. Now, the last movie we talked about was Firecracker, mm-hmm. and that was directed by Sirio Santiago. Of course, he directed also Striker that was released by New World Pictures. So this had that feel. In fact, I think it even was shot in the same areas. I mean, I feel like some of the areas, especially where they have the end fight, was the exact same location that they used for Striker. And they had that big circular dilapidated building.
Yeah,
which I was like, yeah. That building was in Striker, right? Like that, I think they used that building for that as well. So yeah. A lot of the same locations, but definitely also on that same Mad Max trip. But this is a slightly different one. In fact, to me, I feel like this might be Sirio Santiago's conquest.
Well, you know, you have some cannibalistic humanoid underground dwellers in this movie.
You do, yep. Yes.
Yep. You have a high, not only a high titty count, but a high tushy count.
Mm-hmm. In this yeah, a lot of tushies.
It's a high tushy count.
More tushies.
High tushy count.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because yeah. The titty count's really just one set. Just the same
two.
Set.
Well, there's two. Two. There's two.
Well, there's two, but let there's a reason.
Two titties or two titties?
Two sets. Two sets.
Okay,
two sets.
All right, okay.
Two now, sets. The reason Erica doesn't know that is because we doesn't know this is because we had
as I clutch my pearls. What? Well,
because we watched Mark. We watched this with our children.
Mm. So, did you only watch 15 minutes of this movie?
We really had to roll the dice on this one and said, let's just see. If we can watch it with the kids, they're getting a bit older, maybe. And then, you know, the last movie, like I said, Firecracker, it does have nudity in it, but it's very centralized. And they'd added those scenes later after the fact. So Sirio had turned in a very boob-free film. Mm. Well, he was making up for lost time with this one. This one. So there was a lot of cover your eyes, and then during a couple scenes,
just straight up fast forward.
We just had fast forward.
We're not ready to have those conversations yet.
And the bummer
about consent and about.
Well, we need to have those consent after watching this. Consent. We probably need to have that conversation, but
like with each other or with your kids.
No, not with our kids. They're getting educated. We're gonna leave that up to the school district, but. Eric and I
so there's a counseling session happening after this.
I already scheduled it.
Good.
It's good. It's a co-pay.
Very healthy.
It's
a very good.
You scheduled it. That's already a step in the right direction. So I'll be there.
But what I went back and watched a little bit later once the kids were asleep was that amazing love scene between Trace and Stinger. Where they're like superimposed over
tons
like
come out during that.
Oh yeah, there's tons in that too, and it's like it was superimposed over a sunset. Yeah. Oh my gosh! And the music from this from a not Christopher Young but Chris Young before he really established himself. So I don't know when we talked to Tony Randall. I don't know if he got Chris to do the music for this, but I have to think it was him that did that. Because Chris is just coming off of doing like The Power and The Dorm That Dripped Blood. And I just feel like he had done a little bit with New World. And I think at that point, Tony had gone back to New World. So he was working there, but I guess maybe somehow in the connection, because he left New World with Corman that went back to New World after he'd sold it. I have to think Tony's, you know, the person who got Chris to do the score. But anyway, good score.
Yeah.
But before we go further, let's talk about this, what this movie is about, and make up our own Letterboxd synopsis. Mark.
This is a movie about a guy who has a car with a jet engine on the back of his car that he doesn't use hardly at all.
It's enough to just have it.
It's a flex for sure, but it'd be a bigger flex. It'd be a flex harder if he used it more often.
What about those moments when they are speeding down the roads like Keystone Cop style because they're undercranking the film?
But it's about a hero who at every turn makes a bad decision.
Oh man, especially at the end. Boy, does he make a couple bad decisions.
Nobody should listen to this guy. Mm-hmm. Because it should be he's supposed to be your striker of this movie, except every decision he makes results in the death of someone that means something to him. It's a lesson in poor decision making under pressure.
Okay, Erica, what's your Letterboxd synopsis?
A brother and a sister race through the desert, finding love, experiencing loss.
Okay. They find love with other people. That's just to be clear.
This is my synopsis. Okay. A brother and a sister race through the desert in separate cars. One finds love. The other finds a lady with an exotic pet who has a secret, who she reveals upon first meeting. They race through the desert. The sister gets in trouble, but the brother's in no hurry to fix it or save her. You'll never fly to space. Kaboom! A war! Watch out! Wheels of fire, wheels of fire.
This is the first Letterboxd synopsis that ends with a song.
But it'll just be typed with the musical note, wheels of fire, musical note, wheels of fire.
Yeah. I kept it simple. My Letterboxd synopsis is that picking the wrong guy to go out with could end up nearly destroying what's left of society.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, when in doubt, use what little precious gas you have for your flamethrower.
Right, right.
When the guys are like, all they have to do is back up.
Yeah, or duck.
Like, oh, he's shooting flames. Just back up 2 steps. We'll be fine.
Or if you catch on fire, just stop, drop, and roll. Right. Is that not a thing in the future?
No, they just fall down. They just fall down and just go, burn myself to death.
Also, I feel like the flamethrower's safety was on because no matter what angle you took flame, it only got on your back. But to your point, nobody needed to die. It was just their back of their shirt was on fire. There's plenty of sand. Just lay on the sand. Just
roll around.
Just wiggle around in it. You'll be fine.
Nope.
Yeah.
They were like, well, this is it.
This is the end.
Let myself melt.
So this movie, you're right. It's about a brother and sister. And she makes I feel like she makes the first really bad decision. And she's dating this dude who sucks.
Yeah.
But I think what Mark's saying is the bad decision there, because I'm trying to think, like, does every bad decision, basically you're getting me to think, because I know he does some very bad decisions at the end. But
this is great.
Whoa. This is the episode we get
156. It's finally
Ryan
happening.
Ryan thinks.
It's well beyond that, Mark. We're at like, wait, what did you say? 256?
Is that what I said? 156. I don't know.
No. We're way above that. 200 probably.
Now I feel worse. It took that long.
Oh, yeah. Now Ryan makes Mark think. Oh, the only person who's taking a break from thinking on this episode and every episode is Erica.
This is the time where you get to not think. That's I'm glad we provided you with that opportunity.
Woo! Take a break.
Yeah, we're already into the episode a little bit. Take a break. No, I'm trying to think of all the times. So I think the bad decision he makes early on is the fact that he just goes, I don't know about this dude. He clearly thinks this guy's a douche. He knows the guy's a douche. Guys know when another guy's a douche. Whether they do anything about it is the question. And the only reason why you'd think that Trace is the main guy, why you'd think he'd do anything about it is that this is his sister. So
yeah, maybe, dude.
But she's like, you don't get to tell me what to do, and you don't tell me about the guys I go out with. So he's like, all right, you make your mistakes then, right?
Yeah, he lets her learn a pretty tough lesson.
A very tough lesson. Like, yo, dude. Like,
I'll let you die from this lesson.
He does attempt to save her in, like, the stupidest, dumbest attempt ever.
Yeah.
Right, which makes me think he wasn't really trying. He was like...
Where he also was like, I'll do it alone. And they're like, you shouldn't do it alone. It's
Mom and Dad are going to ask me, did you try to save her? And I can say, yeah, I did. I did.
I did
But
try.
You know the dad's going to be like, but listen, Trace, did you really try? Did you? I mean,
I went over there with my favorite gun and I broke in alone to a camp with like hundreds of dudes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I got caught instantly. And what was I going to do? Bring other friends with me or gather an army in order to save her? Like, what was I going to do?
Yeah. And then the mom's like, how long and how frequently were her titties out? Be honest. And he's like, constantly. And she's like, damn it.
She was tied to the hood of a car and they just drove around with her boobs out.
Oh, great. So grad night all over again. Oh, my God. This girl. Just wear your dystopian bra, for Christ's sakes. You're killing your mother.
And can we just take a beat here that all of this, all the car chases, the ultimate demise of Trace's sister, the death of her boyfriend, all of this, hundreds of people die in this movie, which... makes that sound like it's really cool, but I'm telling you it's not, and we'll get into it. Hold on. Is all because of a bet that went wrong? This movie starts with the premise that she has bet on a fight. She's bet her car on a fight.
Oh, and she
gets duped because they bring in a ringer. And then Trace comes in and almost kills the ringer and takes the keys. And that starts this whole succession of death with just one bad bet.
So I guess his sister does do two bad decisions. One, she decides to date this total loser. Two, mm-hmm. she decides this total loser should be the guy that fights this other dude to the death. And I'll put my car, probably the most precious thing possible in this post-apocalyptic future, and I'll use that as the collateral on my dumb boyfriend who's stupid and sucks. And yes, they pulled a fast one, but I'm not sold that in the timeline wherein her boyfriend really does fight the guy that she thought he was going to fight, wins that fight. I'm not sold that he wins either fight. Mm-hmm. He certainly didn't win the second one when they put in a ringer. I'm not sure he would have won that first fight. I don't know. I'm not sold. By the way, Trace's sister is named Arlie. And she is played by Linda Weissmeyer, who was a Playboy Playmate. And
yeah, that tracks.
And she was, familiar to New World because she had been an Avenging Angel. And the same year as this, Wheels of Fire, and also the same year she was in Malibu Express playing June Knockers.
Nice.
And she would end up in Evil Town and Teen Wolf and a very brief role in Real Genius. And then she would quit the business, but was known to New World audiences.
Early on in this movie, they introduce this character, Skag, who for like a hot second, I thought was Al Cliver of Endgame and zombie fame.
Yeah. You're like, I was like, is this Italian? I thought this was a Filipino production.
Oh, wow. How did he end up in this movie? But it's not. But for a minute, I was excited.
I don't know much.
Isn't that guy's name Jack Daniels?
His name is Jack
His
S.
name is
Daniels,
Jack Daniels.
Which is not his real name. I'm sorry. That's
what?
Not his name.
What? So, no.
What did he throw the S in there for?
That's not his name.
His real name is Samantha.
Yeah.
He goes by Jack Daniels. Jack Samantha Daniels.
I mean, our main guy, too, Gary Watkins, plays Trace. Our main guy, Trace, is like, they were like, well, I don't think we could quite cast Sid Haig in this role, so let's get somebody who looks like Sid Haig if he had a fuller head of hair.
I don't know. I kind of think he's like a poor man's Tom Berenger.
he definitely is.
I thought he was a poor man's era Eric Roberts. Not as handsome as Eric.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, he is definitely like the.
He's the Billy Baldwin.
Billy Baldwin's the handsomest one
Billy
of them.
Billy Baldwin is the hottest one.
God, Mark. So wrong. God.
Shit. Which one was the one that was in Vampires? Is that Steven? Carl Baldwin?
No.
Carl.
Jack Daniels Baldwin.
Jack S. Daniel.
Jack Daniels dash B. Jack B. Daniels.
Jack S. Daniel. I can't even do it.
You won't go there. You don't want to.
I can't get it wrong. That is, you're thinking Daniel Baldwin.
Daniel
Baldwin.
There's a Daniel. See, that's a,
which one did I say? I thought I said
you
Daniel
said
Baldwin.
Billy.
You said Billy.
Billy. Oh,
you're
right.
You're nuts. Billy's the hot one.
Yeah, I think Daniel's the oldest. If I have, I don't know offhand.
Daniel's
but I think
adopted.
He's the old. He looks a lot like Alec.
Are you sure about that?
There was a time when he was like the fat one, and then Alec was like, why am I doing all this exercising? It's dumb. It's a waste of my time.
I'm a bald one. I'll be fine.
I got a face of a bald one.
Pass the croissants.
But Stephen Baldwin's daughter is the one that's married to Justin Bieber.
Wait, right?
Whoa,
what? Whoa, dude. Hold on.
This is your through line on the Baldwins?
Wait, you.
What?
I don't buy it that you don't know, didn't know it was Daniel Baldwin. You know what's too much about the Baldwins for me to buy that you. Oh, I don't know, but also I do know a ton about the Baldwin clan.
Well, wow. We were talking about Stephen. I know all about Stephen.
Quickly, name 15, the 15 kids that Alec Baldwin has now. You know them, apparently.
I don't follow Alec's career. I follow Stephen's career.
You're only Stephen. You saw Usual Suspects and you're like, I pick a Baldwin.
Which Baldwin was in Biodome?
That's Stephen Baldwin.
I mean, you just named two great hits, okay?
The only two movies people know that he did. Those are the only ones.
Which one was in the movie where they had the security cameras in the apartment building?
Billy.
Sliver. That's Billy Baldwin.
That's Billy, the hot one.
And Backdraft. Come on. Billy Baldwin's the best one.
Billy's the hot one. He's in Backdraft and Sliver.
Come on.
Steven's in Biodome and I guess married to or had the daughter.
His
of Justin
daughter. His
Bieber's son-in-law wife?
Is Justin Bieber. I just looked it up.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Daniel's debatably averagely good looking and
he's got some Baldwin looks.
Alex the big funny one.
Daniel Baldwin though is like the eldest Hemsworth. You're like, oh, that's right, they have an older brother. That's right.
Oh my gosh.
And he can do a hell of an American accent. I'll give him credit. He's very good. I like him. But he's
wait,
like,
who? Daniel can do an American
no,
accent?
No, Hemsworth. He has an American accent. He doesn't have to do one. Daniel Baldwin is the only one that's from Australia. The other ones are born in America.
New Zealand, Ryan. Get it right.
Oh, so sorry. Oh, God. I am so sorry. I am so sorry to all our Kiwi audience. I apologize.
There's someone in New Zealand like, fuck you guys.
Fuck this. Unsubscribe.
They're like, fuck this. Unsubscribe. Nah, I'll give them one more chance. Hey, that's the Baldwin way. Give them one more chance. All us Kiwis, we're all Baldwins.
I feel like they've been giving Stephen Baldwin one more chance for years. Should we invite Steven to Thanksgiving? Let's give him one more chance.
One more. Billy the Hot One's just welcoming him with open arms because it just escalates his hotness even further. The more brothers that come, just everyone's
We love Billy, but I don't know. All right. Well, let's talk about the movie.
What are we talking about?
Welcome to our new podcast, The Baldwin Cast, where we...
Apparently we need to start one. Mark knows a ton about the Baldwins.
We only discuss the Baldwin family.
I didn't realize he knew so much about the Baldwins.
Well, she sold like a makeup line.
You literally asked us, like, he's the one who's just...
Time out. He's about to crunch the numbers on the makeup line for Justin Bieber's wife.
Yeah, she just sold her makeup line for $1 billion.
Mark.
A billion.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
Wow.
That's way more than you'll make on Sliver.
But she needs that makeup to look beautiful. Billy's just got it.
It felt like Vinegar Syndrome was selling it for $1 billion on their website. Am I right?
Yeah. Well, and you and I both own it, so we're both out of billion.
We were
on that
subscribing,
one.
So we didn't have to pay that kind of cost.
Yeah, it was only $500 million.
Outside of the bad decisions that these people make, I have to say, I know there's a moment when I'm sure now I know why you didn't like this movie, and that's because there's a moment when early on where a car goes off a cliff and then it explodes, and I know that was a moment where you were like, ugh. This movie.
A car crashes into the side of a hill and explodes. I mean, cars explode constantly in this movie.
Yeah.
They're being pushed off of hills, off cliffs, into the sides of mountains so often that you're kind of like, okay, got it. You had a bunch of junked cars that you could blow up and you took full advantage. I get it. I get what you're doing. Yeah.
But you are sitting there judging it.
Yes, because I'm like, these cars are not going to blow up. That's ridiculous.
That's not how cars work. I know
that's not how cars work.
And so I knew we were in trouble. My thoughts, though, honestly, I was watching this kind of going, I kind of am loving this. And I don't know if it's just because it reminded me of Stryker. It was kind of like you mentioned, Mark, when we watched Standalone. I'm not saying this is a great, well-constructed film, but it was like that warm blanket of like, oh, we're back into this kind of just cheap, you know, cruddy. And then on top of it, I have to say the difference between this and Stryker, where Stryker really wins on having pulling a late third act twist
at the very
the baby
end
and everything, where you're like, was this a different movie the whole time? It makes you have to think about the movie for a while and then go, maybe I love that movie. But this one has this weird stuff, like the people that are living under the sand.
Yep.
And the people that like are building a rocket ship that are like good people. They have this one girl who can like read people's minds, you know? And I was like, that's pretty different. One girl has like a hawk that just follows her around. I was like,
they're doing the sound effect of an eagle, but
oh, we just stepped into Erica's cars don't explode like that territory.
Erica, I don't think I've ever been prouder than I am right now.
I'll save it for the Samantha cast, but...
No, that is the bird cast. That's your bird cast. This isn't semantics.
My paw caca. My paw caca can... Say it. My paw caca!
Were you just talking about birds?
My pukaka.
So they had eagle sounds for a hawk, and that was something you instantly noted, right?
Yeah, but it was just like that, like eagle screeching eagle sound.
But that they do that all the time. Yeah. That must drive you nuts, then. Yes.
Oh yeah. It's so easy to get bird sounds and just pop it in there.
That's true. It's true. But you love the fact that there was a bird.
I did. I love the fact that she had a bird, and it was like her bird. It was like her pet, but also it looked out for her, and it showed Trance. What was his name?
Trace.
Which his name would have been Trance. That would have been a lot cooler.
He puts you in a trance with his bad decisions.
You know, when she was pulled underground, the bird was like circling and went to get him. And,
yeah.
You know,
and if he had listened to that bird, he might have saved his sister. I don't know, or something.
Yeah,
you know?
I know.
Well, I came to the conclusion that he was hard of hearing because he needed the bird to notify him that things were not going well for whatever in that town that got attacked when he left the rocket ship town.
Yeah.
Even though he can see, he's within lines, like visual contact of the explosions. You didn't hear any of the gunfire. You didn't hear any of the explosions happening. You needed a hawk to circle around and be like, huh, that's weird. I bet something's gone wrong in Rocket Ship Town. Which, incidentally, there's no way that whole town was going to fit in that rocket.
That rocket was built for, like, maybe two people.
Maybe two people. It was built for that one dude.
Yeah.
That one dude was going to take maybe his favorite.
But this is a movie where a battle happens. Our heroes leave that battle, and then they confront another group of marauding bad guys. We never learn what anyone's plan is or what anyone's end game is. It's just, oh, we need to attack you. So there's another battle. They escape, and then they run into another group of people that are like, well, we've got to fight you now.
I didn't know really what they were building that rocket for. Again, everything in this movie had left you with questions, and I found that really, like, they were like, they literally went through the script and said, anything that tells you anything expositional, cut it. We don't need it. We don't want it. And you know what? I found that really comforting. I was like, oh, this is nice. I don't know anyone's motivations. I like this. This is nice.
And don't you think that they bring the girl who can read people's thoughts or read people's minds there?
Sure. Spike.
Don't you think she could be like, time out. That guy's just having everyone build a rocket just for him.
Sure.
That guy right
there
with the glasses. Like,
but she was saying, everyone's nice here. Everyone's cool here. And I was like,
were their thoughts all just like, we're all going to fit on this rocket.
Yeah.
We're going to leave here and fly into space.
I guess. She didn't tell anybody what she was picking up. The bad decisions you were talking about, that decision where he leaves the rocket town, there's a scene between him and
Spike. Please, Ryan, it's Spaceshipville.
Spaceshipville.
Rocket town.
Please. That's down the road, idiot.
This is Spaceshipville.
They're building a giant rocket that would move an entire town. We're building a spaceship that will house me and maybe one or two other people. And we will fly to I don't know where. Also, like, yours was like, you can't fit that whole town in there. My thing was like, how are they going to get the gas needed? I don't know a ton about rockets, but I know you need a shit ton of fuel to get that thing into space. But
anyway. Also, they said that they had found a new planet. And they were going to go to this new
planet.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And they were going to go to this new planet.
Oh,
which,
that's where they were
again,
going. Got it.
How far away is that planet? We can't even get to Mars. And they're going to go to a new planet they just discovered? That's impossible. This is wishful thinking township is where they're actually residing.
I like how you're mad. We can't even get to Mars. Suck. Why do we want to go to Mars? I don't know. I just want to get there. Shut up. Can't even get this stupid planet that I don't even know what we would even do on it. Cares. I'm just mad. But there's a scene, not that we have favorite scenes, but the scene is where she comes up to Trace and knows he's going to leave. And she's like, you're leaving, aren't you? And he's like, yeah. And of course she's asking him, she's kind of wondering why, as are all of us. Because we're like, why? Why leave?
Yeah.
Why now?
Right.
And then
certainly not to go save his sister.
No. And in fact, he leaves and then comes back after they're pretty much all dead and then just comes back. And I was like, where did you go? Where were you? What was the mission?
Again, bad decision where he's like, shit, I should not have left.
Between the two of them, he basically, I forget what he says, but he basically tries to comfort her. And he's like, you okay? I got to go.
You're leaving, are you?
I have you, Spike.
Not coming back?
I guess not. Hey, what's wrong? So long, people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Moment of just being like, yeah. It was a great exchange, and it just was like, yeah, it doesn't make sense you're leaving. Your exchange is awkward because this whole thing is dumb. Why would you leave? And then he finds out by coming back that his sister is indeed captured by these guys. Mm-hmm. Then he runs out by himself, gets caught. His sister gets caught again. Which she was at a point where, like, she really needed to be rescued. You had really put that off too long, my man.
Yeah, yeah.
Lack of
way
food was
long.
On the lower end of things that were...
She was starved, but really, she was starved for a lot of things, not just food. And you had really put that off for too long.
Yeah.
Think about it. it's the end of the world. There's not that many places she could be. And you've got a car with a rocket ship on the back. You could probably cruise
that,
around and
that
find
you
her.
Never use. That you refuse to turn on.
Mm-hmm. You could find her. You could find her. And you know one bad guy. You know there's a bad guy out there.
He's like, I'm saving it for a special occasion. I could light it up if I wanted to.
I'm going to head to that new planet. I'm going to fly in my car.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Scourge is our big bad guy, played by Joe Avelina, who had been in a bunch
Squat?
Of... Squat? No. That's Tommy Lee Jones in Black Moon Rising. But this actor had been, actually, he'd worked in a bunch of, and written and worked in a bunch of films in the Philippines, but he had been an actor. He was in like TNT Jackson. He was in a very, very small role in Cover Girl Models.
He was in Cover Girl Models?
Yeah, like in an uncredited role, like just some.
God, were we the only people who weren't in Cover Girl Models? Damn it.
Pretty much. But he wasn't supposed to be this character. They had actually cast an American actor,
Tommy Lee Jones.
Kind of close in a
close,
weird way.
Close.
They had cast Lee Ving from Fear as this role, and they brought him out to the Philippines, and they set him up in a hotel. Apparently, there's an interview on this with Clark Henderson, who's a PA on this movie, and he worked in post-production at New World and stuff and was Roger's assistant for a while. So he tells a story where Lee Ving, they said, just sit in your hotel a couple days, look at the script, and then we're going to shoot your scene. And apparently he just left.
He
left the country.
God,
just took off. That's pretty punk rock.
Yeah.
To just be like,
that is pretty punk rock. Absolute balls. Woo.
He was just like, screw this. And so then they cast Joe instead. And, you know, he did great. I actually thought he was really good in the part. But he wasn't supposed to be. He'd been in a bunch of movies for Sirio before, so it made a lot of sense that he would just kind of put him in the role anyway. Gary Watkins, I don't know where they even cast him from, the guy who plays Trace. Where
trance?
Was he put you in a trance? Although the only thing that knocked you out of it was the bird sounds.
Mm-hmm. That was a terrible imitation of a bird sound. Oh my God, how horrible.
Oh man. Yeah,
I thought you were stroking out there for a minute.
He'd been in Johnny Dangerously, and then he's just been in a bunch of random
things.
He was
in like one episode of Hunter.
Yeah, a couple episodes of the new Mike Hammer series. I mean, hadn't done a ton. This was definitely, they weren't trying to get anybody with names. It's interesting that they would even kind of... That's Eagles, right?
It's Eagle.
Yeah.
That's Eagle.
Or a post-apocalyptic hawk.
And now we'll do hawk. Different.
Daniel Baldwin, Stephen
Thank
Baldwin.
Thank you.
It'd
be in reverse, though.
Yeah.
Stephen would be the Eagle and Daniel would be the hawk.
This is also like, it's just interesting that they would want to sell this to New World. Stryker, I don't think Stryker was a giant hit. This felt very akin to Stryker, only they didn't make any big deal out of water, or they didn't
water
really make
seemed
it
like not a big deal. Just
not
like,
an issue.
Whatever, we need water, we'll get it.
Bullets didn't seem to be a problem.
Nope. Leather was a plethora of leather.
There was, though, this one, I did notice they only Scourge got the football pads.
Yeah. And right, the knee pad. Right. He had some real rounded knee pads.
You had to really get up the chain of leadership, go up the chain of leadership in order to actually get, like, pads. That's how you get pads.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that leather was on display. I remember just watching one scene where Trace walks up, like, a sandy hill, and he's in those boots and that those leather pants, and I'm like... Oh my God, he's got to be just swamp ass walking up.
All of them.
I mean, so hot.
All of them had
swamp
ass.
Oh my God,
ass.
Awful. Yeah.
Ugh.
But I don't know. I enjoyed this movie. I hate to say it. I liked it. I don't hate to say it. I don't mind saying it. I enjoyed it. I had a good time.
I was kind of hoping that when the hawk was introduced, we were going to get like a Lady Hawk kind of thing. We'd find out that Stinger actually had like a forlorn lover that was turned into a hawk that she could only see like as the sun started to go down. I thought that could have been a nice twist.
And so at nighttime, that hawk turns into Daniel Baldwin.
Yeah.
A young Daniel Baldwin.
A young Daniel Baldwin. Yeah, exactly. But they could only touch just as the sun was setting for a second. And then that was it, you know. I mean, she's no Michelle Pfeiffer, but I think she could still have pulled it off. So
yeah, she could have. It's interesting, though, that he would make this film. I can kind of see, though, watching it, as much as I enjoyed it, I can see how New World might have been like, yeah, no, we already did this.
Shocking, though, that they weren't like, sure, why not?
Yeah, because, like, they're putting out, you know, Girls Just Want to Have Fun, and they're putting out Tough Turf, and they're putting out, you know, their stuff in 1985.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't really fit with what they were doing, but it's not like, you know, hey, we're putting out Fraternity Vacation. We don't have room to put out this one. It's like,
yeah, but this movie feels like a Corman era New World movie, not a new 100%. Era New
World movie. Yeah, it does. Yeah.
And so you could see, I would venture to guess that the leadership, the executive team at New World at that time was like, this is what we're trying to get away from. We're trying to get into like a younger audience, kind of more teen focused movies, because that was kind of where they were going with a lot of stuff.
They had already done Crimes of Passion in 84, and now in top of 85.
Like I said, a teen movie that all teens love.
All the teens love that. No, but I mean, that had been like their Ken Russell shot, and that was some sort of like prestige play. So they were certainly like, yeah, we don't want to go back to Stryker, which I don't know how well that did. I don't know how well it did for what it ends up being released. It ends up being released for Concord, and Roger puts together Concord. This, though, is a key film for Roger Corman, because this and School Spirit, which we've also talked about, were the two movies that he had made for New World when he was just under contract, basically, for New World, had sold the company, but they were going to distribute his movies. And that was his plan, was like, great, you'll worry about the distribution. I'll go back to producing movies and then you'll put them out. And I don't have to like have any of that headache. And then they stopped distributing his movies. So that's when he decided, okay, well then I guess I'm going to sue you for $400 million in damages and the return of the company, which is what he basically said, in fact, in this article that I think I read from this article during School Spirit a bit. But he says he had claimed that he had been cheated on the movie Screwballs.
I've seen it.
Space Raiders, Slumber Party Massacre.
I've seen it.
He was upset with some misaccounting.
I've seen it.
And that there was some deliberate misaccounting and accepting kickbacks from advertisers. Then he said that they left the San Vicente Boulevard office in an unclean, damaged condition, which is funny because that's exactly what he did when he gave them those offices to begin with when they bought the company. And everybody that took over from the new world said Roger Corman just left it a mess. So that's funny because I think he's probably a part of that. But then Corman said, my whole point in selling was to free myself of the burden of running the company and to get guaranteed distribution. If I can't get my guaranteed distribution, I'm forced to go back to running the company. And Harry Sloan replied that the company will, quote, honor its commitment to distribute Corman's pictures. This is at the time that he's done the lawsuit. So they're like, we filed this lawsuit to prevent him from violating his agreement by setting up a distribution company. We bought Roger Corman's distribution company because Roger sued, they countersued. Within a couple weeks, though, like in no time, they settle. And they settle within the same month. It's early March 1985, Roger sues, they countersue. And then within 2 weeks, they settle. And the settlement, basically, is that Roger can now set up his Concord, which he does, and that he is allowed to distribute movies as long as they remain restricted. They didn't want him to be able to distribute whatever just like they did, right? Which is probably why it took Corman a little while before they ever even do Concord Video, or he really distributed a lot of his movies to other companies that were doing video, they were in the video market. Shortly after Wheels of Fire, they start going into almost directly just selling things for video. They start making movies just for the video market and not bothering to really put them out too much in theaters. They did put this out in theaters. And basically, Corman laughs all the way to the bank because he not only gets he not only gets to distribute movies, but he also gets his library. And this article talks about that he gets to form Concord, and he gets to own 125 films from his New World days, including Piranha.
I've seen it.
And Death Race 2000.
I've seen it.
And here's a quote. "What's in that library is pure gold," Corman's publicist Milton Kahn said. So that's because of Wheels of Fire and School Spirit.
Well, good for him.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, he turned that straw into gold for sure.
Yeah. I mean, these two movies, crazy. School Spirit, even, like, it's a very crude comedy, but you look, put that next to, like, Fraternity Vacation, and you're like, what's the difference? Like, I mean, is it honestly that, you know, much worse?
Yeah. Yeah. Neither of them are highbrow.
Yeah. These aren't like classy, big classy movies that you're like, huh, we can't do that anymore. Like, you're doing it all the time. You did a lot of your teen movies in 85. It's like, you know, so it's interesting. And then they ended up just selling off. But clearly New World was doing well, and were, like you said, Mark, I think they were thinking, we're past this. We are our own company. We had Angel.
I've seen it.
We had Avenging Angel.
I've seen it.
We had Children of the Corn.
I've seen it.
We have our hits. We don't need Corman anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what happened. But I do think he gets the last laugh. And so does Sergio Santiago, because if you thought, oh, 1985, you know, hey, Road Warrior come out, big hit, we're going to do a bunch of these. According to Roger Corman, though, you know, it's Roger Corman, he said that they were able to distribute Wheels of Fire in theaters, but then they really made their money on the video market, which I'm sure they did. They probably made money on the video market. But they clearly would go back to this well. So it was had to have been profitable in some way, because Sergio Santiago would continue on, and he would do The Sisterhood. He would do Dune Warriors. He would go back to this kind of movie many times.
So do you think, as you're saying, he went back to these movies many times, which he did, do you think that he was thinking at some point, I'm really going to hit the nail on the head with one of these, and it's going to be like another Mad Max that really takes off? Or, you know, I guess I'm curious, Sergio Santiago, and we've covered a lot of his movies, a lot of movies that they follow a similar structure, and they're sort of just a cheap knockoff of another movie that was somewhat popular at the time. You know, he was into the, of course, the dystopian movies, but also the sword and sandal movies and that sort of stuff. I'm curious if he was, if he had aspirations like this next one, Dune Warriors, for example, this is going to be the one that's really going to impress people, and I'm going to be able to make my Raiders of the Lost Ark. I'm going to be able to make, like, finally a big budget adventure movie. Or was he just like, hey, I understand my lot in life. I understand that I'm not going to get bigger than this, but as long as I keep getting movies greenlit, this is going to be my stamp on, you know, the movie industry, that I was just the guy that made all of these Filipino cheap knockoff movies that are enjoyable in their own right, but they're not highbrow, and they're not movies that you're going to say, holy shit, you've got to see this movie.
Right. Yeah. I don't think he was in it for, like, you know, the awards, you know,
but I would have to think that anybody in that field that has made, and he made a lot of movies, that at some point you'd be thinking one of these is going to hit it big enough to get the attention of a producer that's going to say, I want you to make something big.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me tell you, because I'll just read a little bit from an interview with Sergio Santiago that was in Blaxploitation Cinema by Josiah Howard. And he said, this is how he'd like to be remembered. This is how he would like to be remembered. He said, I would like to be remembered as the guy who tried to put the Philippines on the map. As far as the film industry goes, I think I was quite successful. Big films like Apocalypse Now, Platoon were all filmed here. I believe my efforts on behalf of the Filipino film industry have been a good thing. I don't talk about it often, but I support about 80 families who work for my film company in the Philippines. These are families that I inherited from my parents, who were also in the film industry. Making films allows me to express myself creatively and, at the same time, help my fellow countrymen. What more could you ask for?
You know what? That's a way better answer than anything that I was, you know, projecting in my question. To be honest, I mean, that's admirable. It sounds like he understood his station in the film industry, and if he can support these families, if he can bring attention to his country that he was certainly very proud of.
Yeah, great. So I think it's more like the latter option that you said. I think it was more like, hey, I'm getting to make these movies. I'm getting to shoot them in my home country for the most part. I get to employ a lot of my, you know, people that work for me and work for my company. We're making movies. We're making money. I do think that, you know, I really like Sirio and I really love watching like his movies. And there's just, like I said, even with this one, there's just sort of like a real like, ah, yeah, it has a different flavor than like the Italian cinema, but like there's an element of that Italian cinema where you're like, right, this stuff, cool. And you can kind of just enjoy that sort of aesthetic, but he has his own. My expectations, I don't have to worry. Like, I know what kind of movie I'm in for. I know what he's trying to do. He's just trying to make something entertaining.
I think the thing that I struggle with this one, I agree with everything you said, and I do like his movies, but this one was challenging for me primarily because at every turn, there's another barrage of 100 bad guys that are just, everyone's just shooting at each other.
Yeah.
Right.
But there's, because we don't really understand the motivation of anyone in this movie, like why are they doing what they're doing? What is their skin in the game? What do they stand to risk if they lose this battle? And because it's just, they introduce people that at some point there are people with just sort of like a yellow outfit, and then there's people with a black outfit. And I'm like, I don't know the difference. And I haven't been shown that I need to care who these people are versus these other people.
Yeah.
So it just becomes a lot of shooting and cars blowing up, but without any real emotional tension as to like, why should I care?
The yellow guys, I think, are the good. Those are the good guys. And that's the guys he could have gotten. So just kind of skimming through it a second time, I noticed that really early on, Trace runs into one of the first guys in yellow, kind of just after they've escaped from the guys chasing them down after the, you know, his sister's boyfriend, you know, and that fight for a car. And he says, hey, if you want to join, come on back or join back anytime. And he's like, why would I want to do that? So
again,
I guess at some point in time, he was in that yellow army, but now isn't. That's about the only amount of backstory you get for Trace. But then also makes me think later, like, oh, well, when it came to getting your sister, wouldn't that have been a great time to go back to that dude and go, hey, I know I kind of left this group and this army and said to hell with you. But, you know, my sister's been captured and she's desperate for even a cracker and just a modicum of kindness from anyone. I really want to go get her. And could you help me? But he doesn't. He goes off by himself, like you said, just to appease his parents, going, you got to get your sister back. Come on, man. Go get your sister.
Just get your sister. Listen, Christmas is only 6 months away, and we need her. We need to all be together for Christmas.
Go to that base, untie her from the hood of that car, give her some kind of shirt.
Make her wear the shirt.
She won't like it, but make her do it. Yeah. He could have used them is my point.
Well, you have this battle at the end of the movie where Stinger is chasing down. Is it Scourge that she's chasing down?
Yeah.
And he has a sword. She has a gun. She could have just shot him. But she doesn't. She waits for him to just try to run her down. And they both fall off what is effectively an 8 to 10 foot high wall.
Yeah.
Now,
a small cliff, let's say.
But maybe a story and a half. She could have lived.
You know, it's one of those things when you climb up like a tree And then you look down and you're like, ooh, it's pretty tall. Like that's a mountain.
Right.
And then it takes you a little while to get down because you don't, you're not sure how you would jump down. I feel like that was the distance that it took them. I was like, that shouldn't hurt.
But I'm talking like busted ankle, maybe a rib, but not death.
Some scrapes, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Which makes me think she kind of just wanted to die.
She was like, I'm done.
I'm done.
I think she thought her bird would come and break her fall or something.
Who's going to take care of that
bird? Fly and put its talons in the bad guy's face or something.
Where was that bird?
I mean, that bird will be fine.
Well, the bird will be fine, but where was the bird to come to her aid?
I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. It's unfortunate. I don't want to think about it.
That's why you like birds, because they have that mystery.
Well, they do. They might be there. They might not. I don't know. Maybe he found a little field mouse somewhere to eat. Yeah. And that was
the
priority.
Yeah.
Happened upon just a giant bush of millet spray. And it was just like, bro, I got to eat this shit.
Just going crazy.
This is heaven. Wait, I hear my owner falling off a small cliff. Oh, no.
Oh, well. Millet.
Ooh, this rock, I can really scratch on them and my claws. That's nice.
Nature's millet, too, like raw organic millet just out there for the taking.
Well, that is it for us at Wheels of Fire. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Stick around for more episodes of Sci-Fi July Presents Dystopian Summer 2, Dystopia Harder, as we talk about more of the dystopian films released by New World Pictures. And if you want to listen to all those episodes, go to our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com. It's where we have all of our episodes, our articles, our t-shirts. Buy a t-shirt. That helps support the show. Or you can give us a 5-star review. And we'll see you next time at the New World Pictures Podcast, part of Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network. Bye, everybody.
I've seen it.